Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Attention, collectors of vinyl. Have you ever gone into a record store and felt overwhelmed by all the unfamiliar options? Are you frustrated by the constantly increasing prices of classic rock staples? Do you avoid streaming music or long for the days when music was recommended to you by a friend instead of an algorithm? If the answer to any of these questions is yes, then check out I'd Buy That for a Dollar, a podcast about inexpensive, common, and underappreciated records that are waiting to be rediscovered. Each week, hosts Sean, Jeremy, and Peter discuss an album and the artist's history. Previous episodes include selections by the Isley Brothers, the Carpenters, the Doobie Brothers, and Donna Summer, among others. Become a bargain bin pro and impress all your friends with cool music trivia. Listen to I'd Buy That for a Dollar wherever you get your podcasts. Chenault is a tremendously inventive guitarist, singer, and songwriter who currently lives in France. A one-time Toronto fixture who greatly impacted that city's underground music community, both in post-hardcore bands like Flight Camp and also within its improvised and odd folk ballad fringes, which he documented with his Rat Drifting label, Chenault is an unassuming yet towering musical figure. His sixth album for Constellation Records is a gorgeous one called Slowly Paradise, which was released on March 9th, 2018, about a week or two before Eric and I connected for a conversation about its lyrics, love songs generally, the sound of Flight Camp, and much more. Sponsored by Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee in Guelph, Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton, and Planet of Sound locations in Ottawa and Toronto, this is the 389th episode of Creative Control, featuring Eric Chenault, with your host, me, Vish Khanna.
Is as high as a kite, and it's not just a catastrophe. Love will be
Eric. How are you?
Hi, Vish. I'm fine. Thank you.
It's nice to speak to you again. I feel like it's been a few years since we had a formal conversation.
Indeed, it has.
Yeah, it's great to hear from you. Now, where in the world are you?
Right now, I am at home in Saint-Ouen, France, just on the outskirts of Paris.
Nice. Now, this is part of the reason I think we haven't been speaking as much lately. I would hope that's the only reason, frankly, is that you've left Toronto for France. How long have you been in France?
6.5 years now.
6.5 years. And what compelled you to leave Toronto? You were very well established in Toronto, and I will say we missed you. What compelled you? We missed you, and we continue to miss you. Present tense. What compelled you to leave?
I fell in love with a French woman named Mariette Cousty.
Oh, love. Love did it.
Yes. Yeah.
As simple as that. Was it difficult to... I feel like I just had Offworld on the show not too long ago. So Sandro Perry and Craig Dunsmuir of Offworld were on the show. And I made a point of saying to them, because they know you and they work with you and they love you, that to me, the city of Toronto feels a lot different without you in it.
That's very nice. I mean, I think that's very nice of you to say, unless you mean that it's better.
No.
That's pretty sweet.
No, it really does. It really feels different. You were a real force in that community, which, you know, I by extension felt a part of that community, even though I didn't live there. And you were one of the people that made me feel a part of something. So I just want to say on behalf of the people in Toronto, again, don't live there, but I think I can speak on behalf of them right now and say, you know, we do miss you. Are there plans?
That's sweet.
Do you miss it? Do you miss Toronto?
I don't miss the geographic space of Toronto, nor the city itself. But, of course, my friends I miss dearly, yeah.
I want you to expand upon that. You find, is this just, are you saying this in comparison to your life in Paris? Or
no.
No, it's just...
I won't miss Paris when I leave it either. I don't really miss things like that. I mean, my daily life can kind of happen anywhere. There are certain things about Toronto that I miss. And to say that I don't miss it doesn't mean that I didn't love it, because I did and do.
Yeah.
But I'm happy here. I enjoy being in France very much. And, you know, things change, and my nostalgia is specific to people and not so much the place. I mean, Toronto's not unlike Paris. It's just another big city. There are obviously differences, but they're both insanely expensive.
Right.
They both have good food, and so you know, you kind of it's not that different actually.
How long had you lived in Toronto prior to leaving?
35 years.
Is that most of your life?
That is most of my life, yeah.
Or all of your life? Are you from Toronto?
No. I was born in the United States and then moved quite swiftly to Switzerland and spent 3 years there, and then moved to Thornhill, north of Toronto, in 1976.
Right. Yeah. Okay. You are deeply connected to Toronto and the area.
Yes,
for sure.
Oh, yes,
it's a part of you. Can you speak to that? I mean, do you feel like a Toronto person in Paris? Do you feel like a Canadian person away from home?
No, not so much. not so much. I mean, yes, when I first moved here, indeed. Hmm. And there are still certain things that probably on any given day I could feel like that. But what would I say? I would say that, I mean, my days are very simple and very repetitive. And I actually don't need, in fact, Mariette and I are planning to move to the south central France, to the countryside, because I spend a lot of time alone, either playing music or reading or cooking or or watching films. So that those activities are not very different wherever I am.
Right.
But musically, I very much feel like a Torontonian. Not a Canadian necessarily, but definitely a Torontonian in Paris, because that music has the music that has kind of had the largest, made the largest imprint upon me and continues to, comes from there.
Well, there's the sense from Canadian musicians who travel throughout Europe that they are, as artists, more greatly appreciated by audiences and promoters and venues and whatnot in Europe as opposed to Canada on some level. I have been among people, I think, who felt you yourself were, as a solo artist, have been somewhat unappreciated in this country and in this area.
I wouldn't say that. I think that, you know, there's something about traveling that makes one, I mean, this was the basis of Voltaire's Candide, which is there's always the, well, as you're traveling, there's always the kind of knee-jerk reaction to make associations or comparisons to where you are, from where you are to where you're from. And I think that one thing I've learned in the last 6 years is that this is a completely fictitious exercise that is best a habit best broken. It is true that, I mean, if we're to speak about Canada, it's a very, very, very large country with a small population. And Europe in general is actually not that much bigger than Canada in square feet. You know, I have no stats to back that up, but a general last perusal of the map, I think I remember that being true.
Yeah, if you look at a map, it looks
comparative.
But, yeah, they look
depends where you draw the you know, continental Europe, we'll say.
Yeah,
and I mean, just in France alone, the amount of concerts that I can play compared to in Canada for the type of music that I play is quite a bit. There are quite a bit more places to play.
Right.
And also being here, you have, you know, I can in a 2-hour train ride to London or a, you know, 2-hour plane ride to Madrid or Bologna or Zagreb or, you know, you name it. So there is a lot of places to play all of a sudden with less distance in between.
Sure.
And so that's appealing for someone who enjoys traveling and playing, as I do, to a degree. And I can't talk about Europe in general because there is no real generality. In Toronto, I was able to play more than I do here in Paris. There's less, though it's changing, there's less of a DIY scene, to lack of a better word,
sure,
where you can, you know, play the Transac two times a week. That kind of thing doesn't really exist here for me. So that's one thing that I would note that is different. Potentially, I probably feel a little bit more isolated in a way. But that suits my temperament fine as well.
Do you feel isolated, but do you feel recognized? Do you feel that you have recognition as a musician in the area that you're in?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, people are interested to a degree on a, quite a small scale, but things are going well. And Yeah, it's a hard question to answer specifically, things are going quite smoothly. I didn't feel underappreciated in any way. I mean, I have very low expectations in general.
I think it's a fan's job, probably, to distinguish between under and over and adequate appreciation. Mm-hmm. It's not really an artist's job to suss that out, you know? So I think I'm talking to you as a fan, as a follower, as someone mm-hmm. who has appreciated your work over the years. And so mm-hmm. I think your knee-jerk reaction, the kind of fan I am, is to assume that you have been done wrong and I need to rectify the situation by spreading the word. Well, you know, that's...
I promise you, I can tell you, as the subject, that I have not been done wrong.
Okay.
It's a sweet sentiment.
It is. I suppose it is.
I promise you, if I have been done wrong, I live a completely unaware of that fact.
Right. Okay.
So, okay. All is good. All okay. is good.
Well, I appreciate you fielding those questions. I haven't spoken to you.
Yes, of course.
Sometime, yeah. And I didn't know the story, and I didn't know how you were doing. And you know, you spoke rather eloquently about there being, about it being difficult to speak of Europe generally because it's all so different, yeah. so to speak. So I guess I wonder about things like, but at the same time, you operate, as you say, sort of the geographic area has little to do with how you function on a daily basis. So. So I just wonder if you even experience things like culture shock. I have no idea.
Yeah. I mean, we're talking 6.5 years in here.
Yeah.
The first 2 or 3 years were incredibly difficult, full of joy as well, but stressful on an integrative level. I was very comfortable in Toronto. Potentially, one could say too much so, if that even means anything. I'm not sure. And there was a lot to do there, you know, having to get a new bank and a new, and then all of the paperwork and France being quite a fanatically bureaucratic country, even more so than Canada. It was difficult. And doing all of that with very little language at my disposal when I came here. I barely spoke French at all. And so things are, we're speaking from the viewpoint, if we had had this conversation 4 years ago, it would have a different tonality to it.
Absolutely. Yeah. I can appreciate that too. Yeah. No, this is all maybe a long-winded way of saying, how are you? And you saying,
yes,
I'm okay. I'm actually all right.
Yeah. Yes. Things are good. Okay. It depends on the day, but we'll speak in generalities.
Yes, yes, we will. Now, I want to ask you about this wonderful, wonderful record, Slowly Paradise, and it brings to mind the fact that you have been making music as yourself and with friends for some time in sort of this vein. I don't want to speak too generally of your trajectory, but I'm curious about your relationship with love songs because I think some of us know you as someone who didn't, at least initially, when we first heard of you in some of your louder incarnations, we wouldn't have thought of you as a love song, a purveyor of love songs. When did your relationship with love songs, so to speak, if you had a relationship, when did that begin?
Always.
It's always.
Always. The first music that I ever loved, that I knew that I loved, and continues to be the first single I ever bought was what was that? That was, I know it. It is Diana Ross's Upside Down.
Oh,
yeah, which I actually listened to it not so long ago and realized that the lyrics are actually quite dark. But I'm not very good at picking up lyrics, so I didn't know that. But they actually are quite dark. I didn't think so. I thought it was an uplifting, you make me feel upside down. But it wasn't so much. It isn't so much that, the sentiment. But I always really did. And of course, in Flag Camp, that wasn't really where I was putting my energy, because of the energy of the music and the energy of the milieu.
Yeah.
But then I feel like with Life Like Weeds, right after Flag Camp, with the duo with Gavin, we kind of instantly went a little closer to that.
Yeah.
And that's when I started writing in that way, lyrically and melodically. And I could speak about why I love love songs as a form for hours and hours. I feel like it's nice to hear somebody sing in praise of something. And I think, to take away the religious aspect of praise, when someone is under the spell of something, it affects all of the senses, and it alters you. It in a way, it's a bit of a psychedelic state. And what the beauty of love songs, especially the love songs that I love very much from the American Songbook era, the initial kind of how would you say the idea that they are that it is a love song allows a kind of esprit, a spirit to emerge that where you can talk about little things like seeing a shadow in a weird way. All these details look different when they're in the form of a song of praise. I think it allows for a lot of strange details to emerge that seem lighthearted and strange. And that's one of the things that appeals to me, as well as just hearing the song of praise, which I like, saying that you like something. You know, it's a love song is not that far from having like a it's kind of like an abstract top 10 list or something. You know, it's like I love this, I like that, I like this, I like that. And I think that's pretty interesting. I think that's kind of limitless.
You invoked various phrases there. Strangeness. You talked about Upside Down having darker themes than you recognized at the time.
Yeah.
You kind of talked about weirdness. And I think you talked about love. I mean, I think that's those are all aspects of love that we can relate to, the kind of distortion, that sort of psychedelic aspect of a visceral reaction to it. Within all of that, I feel like you've, in a sense, you've kind of captured your musical aesthetic in a nutshell. Your music seems to really reflect. When I hear your love songs, I hear the confusion and the joy. I don't just hear a direct path to praise. I hear questioning. I hear wonder. I hear unsteadiness. And I feel like you've captured that. And you said something interesting that I want to get to I want to ask you about Ryan Driver shortly, so don't let me forget that.
I would love that. Yeah. I won't let you forget that.
Okay, because you said you don't often pick up on lyrics, and that's why Ryan helped you write some of the lyrics here, so I want to talk about that. But all this to say, this is your milieu. This is your aesthetic on some level, is searching, I think, within your work to figure out how love works and how love functions and why we react to it the way we do, perhaps. Does that resonate with you?
Yeah. To continue what I was already saying, it's some of the strangest films that I've seen all are love films in a way. I could name hundreds of them, but probably not hundreds. I could probably name a few. I'm also a big fan of Japanese court poetry from the Middle Ages and haiku, and those also deal with love in very contrapuntal ways, where there are, you know, there's maybe a couple lines about a lover, but then it just kind of focuses in on a bird in the snow or something. And I think that love songs being simple and knowable, completely knowable in form, allow you to push and pull a little bit. I mean, jazz standards are proof of this.
How so?
Just the way the wordplay, and also the way that you know, if you have a song like "Someone to Watch Over Me," which is a beautiful, beautiful love song. You know, it's not necessarily "I love you, I love you." It's more where do you put the energy of a song instead of what are you going to talk about? So if you're going to talk about anything, and love to me seems like a never ending place to begin some form of opening your mouth. It seems like a great reason to, you know, it's simple. It's in some ways it's kind of dumb. And all of those things allow for a playfulness to emerge, because it's just not that serious. Even though it can be serious, it doesn't have to be taken seriously. Maybe, you know, and I think that all of those things allow for a playfulness. I think love, in a way, is a place to experiment with your imagination and your playfulness of your imagination, mm-hmm. To be less rigid and more supple and taking yourself less seriously. And love really has an incredible, and I don't mean this in when I'm talking about love, I'm certainly not talking about necessarily romantic love. Love has many forms to it. And I think it's a place that stretches your imagination. And I'm interested in music that stretches mine.
Yeah.
So to me, it seems like a perfect fit, you know.
Yeah. So as a concept, you've mentioned that you're not necessarily speaking about romantic love. So love is an open-ended concept for you. I'm just curious, and I don't want to ask too invasive a question, but as a concept, has love... Mm. Has love proven to be elusive for you? Are you still constantly... I feel like your examination, your experimentation with this notion of love speaks to some... It speaks to an interest. I wonder if it speaks to a desire, an unfulfilled vision or idea of love. Does that ring true?
Well, okay. First of all, I'm certainly... I don't write the songs that I do... I don't think they help me in any way be like a better lover or like it's just not really like for me. I like ballads. I like soft weird ballads. So I just kind of take the form, and I like in that form. I'm not necessarily looking at my own life or anything like that. Though obviously these things. Subjectivity is always have a way of getting in there, leaving a footprint or whatever. But for me, it's about the form itself. I would say all of my songs are not necessarily about love, but they are about love songs.
They're about the actual form of love songs.
Yeah, they're playing with it a little bit. So when they're good, you know. I wouldn't say all of that is, but it's playing with the form a little bit. It's like, how much can you stretch it and still call it a ballad, or how much can you, what parts can be abstracted more? Which parts can seem strange? What kind of language can be, I mean, we're talking about lyrics here, obviously, but I mean, one of the main things is that, to sing the way that I do, it would be, I don't really know what other kinds of songs I would sing. To use the voice that I do in the melodies that I do, I'm not really sure exactly what I would be. And I don't think all of my songs are actually even love songs. They just kind of sound like they are.
they are an examination of the form, but they are presented in a way that is odd in terms of the traditional aspects of the form. Like, I'm just looking at the instrumentation you've listed here. You're yourself, you're credited with vocals, electric and unamplified electric guitar, drum, various electronics, Ryan Driver's Wurlitzer 200A, and Marla Haladi is on spinning microphones. These are not your standard song ballad. Some of it is, I guess, but you have created this off-kilter world for these songs, I think.
Well, and so have they, in fact, because Ryan is obviously, everyone out there knows that very well, that Ryan is not that. Ryan's music is not, I wouldn't call it the music the farthest away from what I do. Mm-hmm. Obviously, there are differences, but I think we share so much. There are a lot of things we love together. And Ryan has proven himself to be a faithful lover of the ballad himself.
Yeah,
having played them every last Friday of the month at the Transac with the Ryan Driver Sextet and his own music, amongst many, many, many other things. And Marla, being a visual artist, sound artist, has also dealt with balladry, having used Waltzing Matilda in a piece sung by, I think June Tabor and Tom Waits and maybe Shane McGowan, maybe, as versions. And Anne Briggs, she moved through the fair. So Marla has also used, so all three of us were ballad happy. that's a shared commonality. It's a shared commonality with many friends of mine.
Yeah, and also to take, as you alluded to earlier, to push the form, to push the ballad into some direction that it might. Again, I tried to suggest earlier is there's a certain, and I mean this with great reverence, there's a certain discomfort in your music. There's a certain sense that, as much as I can get direct meaning from it, it feels strange. It feels woozy. You know what I mean? And that's what I was trying to say earlier is that's kind of what love feels like to some of us. A woozy, strange.
I guess but you said uncomfortable. And for me, woozy and drunken and all of that are very comfortable.
Yeah.
For me, and others, I would hope. I can't possibly be alone in that. That would be with the billions of people in the world. That would be somewhat strange. I think that a lot of music that a lot of people find more easy to listen to, I find more uncomfortable. Its rigidity.
Yeah.
Its power. I find power in music, and heavy dynamics, things that make me uncomfortable. I'd listen to a hell of a lot more classical music if they would stop playing with the volume so much and when it gets soft and then loud, and
that's,
and rock music has a similar problem.
Yeah. What you're saying is true. I had this record, your record, Slowly Paradise, playing on repeat on a Sunday, this past Sunday, and we just had it in the house, so the kids and my wife were all just milling around, and it just would play. And I will contradict what I said earlier by suggesting I thought it offered, it certainly set a mood and a tone, and I found it kind of soothing, I have to say.
No, yeah, there you go. Soothing, Kemp. Don't tell me soothing's uncomfortable.
I find being soothed completely uncomfortable. I don't like it.
You don't like massages?
Some I do, actually. I don't necessarily find them soothing because they're usually being conducted for some medical, I got a pain, you know what I mean? That's when I go in. I don't just go when I'm... That's maybe too much about me in a reclined position. But let me just say, I enjoyed playing your record. I've been enjoying playing your record around the house. And
yeah.
Now, I did say I wanted to talk... sorry, I should point out that my line of questioning is not simply informed by the sonic aspects. It is lyrical, and
Of course.
And I want to jump back to
what it's all the same.
Yeah.
It's all the same. I mean, my interest in lyrics is all coming from a kind of general idea of what I like. And those things are abstract and yet particular to each form, whether it's melody or lyrics, but they share very many things in common.
So yeah, yeah.
When we're talking about lyrics, we could be talking about my guitar playing as well.
And your lyrics are they manifest themselves in your phrasing, in your tone of voice, in your singing. It's a happy marriage, I suppose, is not to delve too far into marriage. I don't know why I went there. Romance, love, marriage. But I do.
Marriage is a beautiful thing.
It is. So one of the things that strikes me, and I think this might be a good entry point into how your work with Ryan on these lyrics came to be. But one of the things that strikes me as I look at the song titles on their own and then delving into the lyrics, Bird and Moon, An Abandoned Rose, what else do we have here? We have Wild Moon. There's an elemental aspect and a recurring, like a repetition of even Slowly Paradise sort of recurs in a sense with a different instrumental version. So there's this repetition, and there's also this elemental aspect that is connected to the love song and the ballad. Not unusual on some level, but can you speak to that? What were you and Ryan sort of trying to convey by connecting love to the earth and creatures and whatnot?
Well, I can't speak for Ryan because we really didn't write. The collaboration was absolutely. We didn't talk about anything at all, which is actually, in a way, kind of very. I would say that encapsulates my musical relationship with Ryan in general. We don't really have to talk about stuff. One of the things I love about him, about working with him and playing with him, I think there's a kind of there's a space that just works between us. But basically, to try to make this really brief, because I've said it a million times already, but is that what happened was I had the lyrics for the record, and I didn't.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
I thought they could be better, and I'm lazy. So I love Ryan. I think is the best lyricist alive right now, bar none, in English, because I can't speak for other languages that I don't know.
Sure.
I really do love his. They're surreal, and they're light, and they're strange. And he also started this practice many, many years ago for the Ryan Driver, which was a quartet at that time, translating. The first tune he did, I think, was a Zelia Barbosa tune, and he just took the sounds of the words in Portuguese and made English versions of them. To the best of my knowledge, he does not speak many words of Portuguese.
So it wasn't the meaning or the intent of the lyric. It was the phonetic. It was just the way they sounded.
The phonetic, yeah. Exactly. Hmm. And I knew that Ryan had done this, and I know that this song, and I think he had done it to some others after. I'm not really sure. That one for sure. And I thought, oh, this is a great opportunity to try that out. Mm-hmm. So what I did is I sang the lyrics. I sang the lyrics of the song. I mumbled some, you could almost hear what word, and sometimes not. Some phrases that I was content with or just failed to mumble were clear, and I sent it to Ryan.
Yeah.
And asked him to translate that, or to, you know, I didn't actually say, can you translate that? Yeah, I said, can you work with this and write me a bunch of lyrics? And so he did, and he listened, and some he just used what I had written, and then wrote. And some words or some phrases were clear, were too clear to be able to translate out of what they were originally. And others were different. Yet they all fit the song perfectly because he was listening to me sing. Hmm. So phonetically, rhythmically, they all worked. And they were incredible. And they were really very funny. to me in the most beautiful, strange way. Then what I did with them is I took those lyrics, and just to further complicate the situation, I started to eliminate some and write in a kind of Greek chorus, if you will. So like if the first, perfect example is the first is Slowly Paradise, what they call the title track. And it is, the first lyric is, summer is gone. Then Ryan had written some things. I erased those things and put, or attachment to the seasons wind up at unwound. So that and if you look at it on the lyric sheet, it's in parentheses.
Yes, I see it now.
I'm kind of talking to Ryan's lyric. So Ryan's saying summer is gone. I'm saying, well, maybe it's not.
It's like a fact check comment.
Yeah, it's like maybe it's this that you're feeling. And so it was kind of like a ridiculous conversation. But I wrote it in using a very, very abstracted use of the Greek chorus, where the protagonist in a Greek tragedy says something, and then the chorus behind it goes, oh, he doesn't seem to be enjoying this much. So, and I was like, I'm going to do that. I want to be that Greek chorus. I love the Greek chorus. I think it's a beautiful form. I decided to push that form. I mean, the Greek chorus has has historically a very specific function. It's supposed to let the audience in on things that they weren't aware of that aren't being spoken by the main protagonists. I didn't stick to that part. I just kind of little asides and little questions to complicate some of the sentiments that were being explored in what Ryan had sent me.
So there are questions that pepper the songs here. Every song has a definitive question. In Bird and Moon, was it the wind? That's why it seemed a warmer night. And within that, there's more questioning. You know, like you say, summer's gone, or attachment to the seasons wind up at unwound, or is it a breeze? And then there is a song called Abandoned Rose where there is just this why, who, why, what has found me? You know, what has found me? Where are we to not be wrong? they're very fascinating and deep questions, I think. And I'm curious if you can speak to where all of that questioning kind of comes from exactly. Again,
I find questions and songs really hilarious. I really do find them really hilarious and especially when or is it a breeze, which is kind of almost barely a question. I don't even know if there's a question mark after that, is there?
There is on the lyric sheet. Oh, there is.
Okay, so yeah. It's a question. But I like the idea. It's basically playing with the idea of believing the subjectivity of the singer. So you have, I'm a singer-songwriter, and so you have a singer-songwriter, and they're like, the night was, I don't know, orangey. And you have to believe it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, okay, the night's orangey. But what if the subject didn't really, you know, wasn't so sure of anything?
Yeah.
And was kind of like, or maybe it's that. And I find it kind of, it strips some of the power away from the questions, strip the subjective power of the singer. And, you know, not always, like when the who go, who are you? I find that to be offensive. Because they're talking to me. They're who are you? It's like, I would never do that. Never do that to anybody. I don't, first of all, I can't imagine that anyone wants to be asked, who are you?
So your position maybe, and correct me if I'm wrong, but the narrator, the songwriter, the subject of the song, the protagonist of the song is often processed by the listener as this omnipotent force, mm-hmm. and yet you're trying to portray, or not trying, these songs portray the narrator, the songwriter, the protagonist mm-hmm. as being just as uncertain about things as some of us mm-hmm. might be. Is that the notion?
It's also separating the words from the singer, because some of these questions come out and they aren't necessarily, this is one of the things also that I love about jazz ballads, is that most of the time, the singer didn't write the song.
Yes.
And so there's a remove. That remove allows for a playful beauty to emerge. And I feel like some of these questions that disrupt the form of what might be considered first-person self-expressive material, I think these questions make it very hard to argue that these songs are within that form.
Right.
They are not the expressions of the singer. The singer is singing words that were written by another hypothetical person or being.
So it's a bit of fourth wall destruction. It's a little meta on some level.
It's a little meta. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is interesting. It's fascinating because.
Yeah. It's just being playful. It really is. It's not that complicated. It's certainly not that smart. I just really think that music's at its best when it's playful, which doesn't mean that it has to be fun. But I like playing around with something. I mean, why not, you know?
Yeah.
There's already so much music out there. No one needs to do it anymore.
Yeah.
So, you know, the stakes are low, you know? You just kind of, no one's gonna be harmed by you fucking around with something. So, you know, there are certain things that the stakes are quite high if you start fucking with social welfare in certain ways. That could have, you know, or if, you know, you start, experimenting with voting for insane human beings in the United States, that's going to have real impact on people's lives. So songs are, and art in general, are a place where we can play with things in a somewhat safe environment, I think.
I'm just curious if your approach to exploring more playful aspects of songwriting is in any way a reaction to what you see as an absence within the form. Do you think music is, and I don't want to speak too generally, but is this an observational reaction? Like, I mean, everyone's taking themselves way too seriously. I'm going to try to play around here.
I'm not trying to fix anything. there's lots of great music. I'm just, there has to be a reason to want to do something. And most of the reasons for me wanting to do anything have to do with playing around with something.
Yeah.
I don't think that everyone takes themselves anyone at any given moment takes themselves too seriously. This is, you know, life's hard.
it is.
It's tough, man.
And it's a serious time.
Serious times.
It feels very serious. I want to ask one last lyrical question, because even just hearing it was different than reading it on the lyric sheet, which you've made, by the way. Your album cover is the lyric sheet, which is really cool.
Lots of words.
Yeah.
Mariette, the person that I decided to move here to live with, she does all of my artwork, all of the artwork.
Right. Right. Yeah. Well, it's cool.
She's great. That was her idea. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a nice one. I want to ask about this. There are dreams we call the breezes. So on the on the lyric sheet, the breezes is italicized. It suggests it's a thing. What is the breezes?
I don't know.
Is it a novel? Is it a film?
It's ridiculous. It's because it's kind of sung as if as you know, there are dreams that they call the breezes. I mean, I think that's a world that is not worse than the world we're living in. To say, as you know, did you have one of the breezes dreams? It's beautiful.
Yeah.
And Ryan wrote that. You know, Ryan wrote that line. So and that's right up his alley. It's very surreal. It's very simple. It's a very simple bunch of words that disrupt many forms of knowledge. Yeah, I think so. It's very. I love that. I love that line very much.
Yeah, no, it's good. It just like I say on the page, just so people are clear here who are listening, the Breezes is not only italicized. The is capitalized. It very much looks like its own entity.
Yes, it's a title of a form of dreaming. Of dreams.
I've never seen that before on some level, and that's very fascinating.
But maybe now you will be able to know when you wake up in the morning whether you have had a dream that is of the Breezes form.
Well, I will look forward to that, actually.
It's not too late, Vish. It's not too late. You could be dreaming the Breezes every night.
Yeah, no, I could. I probably am. I don't even know it. I definitely will be tonight, I think, just based on this conversation, for sure.
Yeah,
We alluded to earlier, or you did, I guess, to your old band, Flag Camp, and this is sort of out of left field, but it feels like louder music of that era, that vintage, it's been reappreciated, and there seems to be, I'm seeing younger bands who seem to be finding such things on YouTube or something and playing music like you used to play. How far removed are you from that sound at this point in your life?
I don't know.
Do you listen to loud music?
Yeah, sure. I listen to, what was the last, I listen to a lot of hip hop.
Right.
So it's differently loud. But, like, sure, I listen to This Heat a lot. Mm-hmm. The Rolling Stones, they're pretty loud, I think.
Yeah, they can be. Yeah, yeah.
A lot. Yeah, I listened, and maybe not, I didn't really listen to it that much when I was playing it.
Yeah, I suppose that's probably a more accurate question. How much of the music that you used to play would still enter your life at this point? Like your ears, I suppose, specifically.
Well, I listened to a lot of the same music because at that time, when we were in Flag Camp, I was listening to a lot of reggae, a lot of bluegrass, and a lot of jazz.
Right.
Gavin, the drummer, that's not his last name. His name is Brown. He was a drummer. He was just a jazz fanatic. So, you know, and we were very, very close. So I was listening to a lot of jazz with him. A lot of Eric Dolphy and things like that.
Yeah.
And I was listening to a lot of bluegrass and reggae music, both dancehall and roots.
So you're distinguishing the fact that while you were in Flag Camp, which was a fairly aggressive sounding,
very loud
post hardcore band, if you will.
Yeah.
While you were in that band, you weren't really listening to other bands or artists that sounded like your band.
No, I, at that time, what was I listening to? I was listening to the Gang of Four. I was listening to the Cocteau Twins a lot. They're not very loud, are they?
No, the Jesus Lizard.
Yes. Yeah. Okay, there we go.
Yeah.
And then that whole Chicago scene and Slint and stuff. I listened to that. Yeah,
right,
for sure.
Right. Right.
No Means No and the X.
Right.
And then the Slits and the British post-punk I adored and still do. I listen to it a lot, actually, still.
So I guess, right. So the point, I guess, of the question really is that I'm seeing a lot of people who moved on, who were involved in those kinds of sounds, move on, but I'm seeing a lot of them come back, and it's sort of curious. And by and large, I've seen them play that kind of music better than they ever played it because
who?
Well, the Jesus Lizard for one. When I went to the reunion tour in, like 10 years ago or whatever it was, I thought, my God, like I saw that band a bunch of times. They seem better. They seem more relaxed with themselves. I just saw Hot Snakes in Detroit a couple of weeks ago and saw them back in the day. And I thought, man, like the social dynamic, the wisdom, the age, the kind of, I think that sense that time is a little precious. It just all seemed to inform the urgency of their music more. You know, this is not something to be trifled with. So that's all it is. I see it from time to time. And I think, wow, like there's a sense of
Because I think a lot of that music was made when people were, I'm speaking generally, but I think your emotions are more fraught when you're younger.
Yeah.
And you kind of have a better sense of yourself as you get older, which kind of lends your craft more focus on some level. So all of this to say, I just wonder if you're ever compelled to play louder than you do now.
No.
Not in that form.
Nope. I don't like playing loud at all. In fact, I was recently asked to do play some improvised music with some of the folks from Wolf Eyes.
Right.
And I couldn't do that.
Too much.
I mean, I don't even know if they always play loud. Or I saw them once and it was really loud and very good.
Right.
But I can't do it. I don't like it. I don't like it at all. I don't want to play loud at all. I love, you know, if Père Ubu came to town, I'd be there in a second.
Right.
I love it, but I don't want to play at that volume ever again.
Is that a physiological impulse? Like to just be like, I can't, it hurts. It hurts to do it.
Yeah, it hurts my ears. I don't like it. And I can't improvise very loudly without just kind of squawking,
right,
or whatever you call that.
Right.
And I don't really like to play music where I'm not improvising very much. So less so now than when I was younger. So that's also a factor.
Okay. Well, I appreciate that answer. I just was curious. I think some people, you're aware of this, right? Like a lot of these.
Oh yeah. They just re-released the Flaycamp records, the Brave New Waves. That's just all been re-released. Like I think this month or something.
Oh, I didn't know about that. Who re-released it?
There is somebody going through all of the Brave New Waves archives, the Brent Bambury years.
Yeah.
And releasing all of those recordings that the Brave New Waves sponsored. And the Flaycamp one is done and released. I saw a photo of it, actually.
Is it a physical release? Or?
Yeah, physical CDs.
Oh.
I don't know if vinyl or not, but I'm not sure. But CDs for sure. And it's the BBC record, which is by far the best thing that band ever did. Much better than the record that came out on Cargo.
So wait, you're saying the BBC record is also coming out or did come out?
BBC record came out.
It came out. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was released by Ouroboreales as called Repeat Until Change many years ago. And now the archives, it's been remastered by Harris Newman.
Oh, yeah.
Some people out there might know very well, and yeah, it's been re-released. I'm quite pleased about that.
So those sessions were recorded. So the Brave New Waves one and the BBC ones. Mm-hmm. Where were they?
Oh, not BBC. Sorry, not BBC.
Oh, that's why Brave, I was okay.
I confused you. You have to realize I'm at 7 o'clock here Paris time.
Right.
It's usually the time of day where my brain is not working quite as you'd wish it would.
No, that's fine. So sorry, you were saying that the Brave New Waves CBC sessions were notable, more notable than the actual Flaycamp records that came out. What made that session so special?
I think we just were a little less stressed out about making a real record, so we made real music.
Right. Nice.
Yeah.
Okay. So does the interest in that sort of thing baffle you?
No. I mean, you know, it's people get interested in things. I mean, I'm interested in things that happened well before 1992, and discover things that are older. And there's a remove to finding things that happened at a different time, which probably in some ways speaks to the reissue madness.
Yeah.
Happening in the world, and I don't think that's bad. I mean, I think it's great, you know, as long as people don't fetishize and dehistoricize the situation. I think it's fine. It's great.
That's well put. All right. Well, Eric, what is next for you, per se? This record is out via Constellation Records, and we can tell people that they can go to cstrecords.com for more information about it. And I assume you're touring and doing such things?
Are you? Oh, yeah. Yeah. I got 40 dates coming up. Oh, boy.
Oh, my goodness. Where will they bring you, so to speak, generally?
All over Europe. All over Europe.
Right.
And then hopefully back to your neck of the woods in the fall. That's what I'm hoping.
Okay. All right. Yeah. All right. That's great. Well, is there any one song that you would choose for us to go out on here? And I don't mean to lead you this way, but I neglected to mention or ask you about the Wild Moon video, which is a fun one. And seemed fun to make. Again,
it wasn't fun to make.
It wasn't fun to make. Okay, yeah.
I faked it. Yeah.
So I do, regardless of your choice here, I would like people to know that if they go to cstrecords.com and look under the biographical information for this record, Slowly Paradise, they can watch this great video. It's on YouTube as well. But all that to say, Eric, is there a song from the record that you feel we could go out on that maybe captures any aspect of our conversation well?
Well... yeah. What did we talk about the most? We talked about lyrics of Slowly Paradise and the lyrics of There's Our Love.
That's right.
So why don't you choose one of those?
You want me to choose? Okay, it's on me.
Yeah, because you know your audience.
Yeah, but I like it's true. I find the artist choice.
Narrowed it down.
You did. And I'm compelled to go with There's Our Love.
All right.
I think we should go with that one. Is there anything more you want to say about that one?
No.
That is fair. That is a fair perspective on that song, and we'll play it now so people can judge for themselves. This is There's Our Love by Eric Chenault from his beautiful and excellent new record, Slowly Paradise. Eric, it was a pleasure to speak with you again, and I thank you for being on the show, and best of luck with everything going forward.
Thanks, Mish. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you. pieces. They're all us. There's all us. There's all us. There's all us.
That was the 389th episode of Creative Control featuring Eric Chenow. Thanks to Eric for being on this program. It's nice to be able to spend time with him again. We used to chat quite a bit, and we haven't talked as much since he moved to France. So, yeah, it was really, really fun. Thank you, Eric. And, yes, this is the Creative Control podcast, which is available on the Entertainment One podcast network and is available on all iOS and Android platforms. And also on things like Spotify and Audio Boom. So listen to it there if you like. Why not? If you can't find an episode of the show that you've been looking for some, you know, I don't know why. Sometimes things go missing. Sometimes the feeds only go so far back. That's fine. All of the episodes that you could possibly want of this show are on my website, vishkana.com. And if you want to go there, you can also sign up for my regularly scheduled newsletter and learn more about me, vishkanna.com, vishkanna.com. You can like the Creative Control page on Facebook. You can follow us on Twitter at vishcreative or follow me at vishkanna. Also, listen to a radio show version of Creative Control on Wednesdays at noon Eastern Standard Time around the world at cfru.ca or on an actual radio at 93.3 FM if you're in or near Guelph. Also, thanks to everyone who's gone to patreon.com/creativecontrol to make a flexible monthly donation to keep the podcast going. It really does mean a lot that you do that, and it really does keep the show going. So thanks to those of you who do it, and if you haven't done it yet and have thought about doing it, again, patreon.com/creativecontrol to keep this podcast going. I'd like to thank some of the businesses that support this show in various ways. Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee in Guelph. Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton. And Planet of Sound, which has two locations in Toronto and one in Ottawa. All of them support the show in their own way. So thank you very much to you folks for doing that. Also like to thank my old friend Jim Guthrie for letting me use an instrumental version of his song, The Rest Is Yet to Come, to end this show each week. That's the music you're hearing right now in the background. I'd also like to once again thank all of you who listen to this show regularly. And if you're new to the show, welcome. Thank you for checking out the program. If you can, give it a nice review, a positive review, and a positive rating on whatever platform you're using. And also downloading episodes of the show and just telling people about it if you like it. That would be great. Thanks for doing all of those things. That's all I have to say. I will talk to you very soon. Goodbye for now.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.